So far and wide, keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
All right, everybody.
The chores.
The chores.
Fresh air.
You
be my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Green Acres, we are there.
All Free Farm Friday episodes available free as podcasts to the entire human race at crusademax.com. At crusademax.com, right alongside I'm Only Catholic, Joseph Pierce's The Piercing Truth. Deliver us from evil taste. Folks, there are so many great episodes and so many great series, and you ain't seen nothing yet. And crusademax.com. So check it out today. Well, we haven't spoken with Master Farmer BK from Brian Koch from Texas. And he had some silly thing. He had to go play Baptist snake handler. He had to go take up serpents and stuff somewhere in Texas while he was petting alligators and whatnot. So that's why he missed last week. But looks like he's actually at home today. Mr. Koch, welcome back.
Howdy. How are y'all?
I got him tongue twisted now. As Freddie would say, as my dad would say, he's all frustrated. We're fine. Well, we're fine.
Good. I missed last week because I actually was working at my job. I mean,
no, I saw you in a barn full of yokels.
That was the day before. That was the Thursday.
So,
and I was demonstrating the watershed model to fourth graders.
Well, not each county.
A lot of counties. Their Farm Bureau puts on what they call Ag in the Classroom.
Oh, good.
And so they teach the kids about agriculture. And one of the partners is the local conservation district. Well, they asked me to come talk about watershed model. So that's what I was doing last Thursday. Now, last Friday, I was actually at a soil and water conservation district meeting. We have a project with them to help farmers implement conservation practices because we're trying to lower the bacteria levels in a creek that, you know, we did a project on and everything. And so we were trying to clean up some old money and get them a technician and all this other stuff. So that's what I was doing last Friday.
I'm just messing with you, bro. You don't have to explain yourself.
I do work.
Yeah, but was that a rattlesnake that you had around your neck? Was that a rat snake?
It was a bull snake, which is harmless unless you're a rodent or a frog or something.
Unless you're a frog.
Yeah. The place where we held it at actually used to be a state park, and it has a lot of, you know, woods and stuff in it. Well, the local river authority a few years ago, the Texas Parks and Wildlife sold off a bunch of state parks. Well, this was one of them. So the local river authority bought it and turned it into a park. And they actually have people on staff that, you know, teach, you know, about the local wildlife and stuff. And that's what it was. The snake was actually caught on the property, and they were able, you know, they may have found it somewhere or something, but it's something that occurs there. So they were demonstrating that to the kids too, because, you know, there's a lot of farmers who also manage for wildlife and hunting leases and stuff, and, you know, people were very interested in that interaction too. So it's kind of a neat deal. You know, they there's a lot of big conventional ag stuff that you have to filter through, but other than that, you know, I think it's good to get people to see where their food comes from. So,
do you like John Sharp, Commander Sharp's analogy that you can buy a chicken out of a package, or you can buy an egg out of a package, or you can buy an egg that came from a chicken?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just that's a wonderful way to put it. The person that wants to buy an egg that came out of a chicken wants to know whose chicken it was, where did it lay it at. The person that wants that out of a package doesn't care.
Yeah, no, yeah. They just want, they, you know, they want to eat from the factory so they can have the energy to run, you know, be a part of the factory. You know, they're just a cog in the wheel, and this just keeps it going. You know, it's all, you know, whatever the factory is, you know, creating technology or the public school system or, you know, whatever. It's all industrialized into the fact, you know, whatever the... I think we all know that story, you know, so it's just a cog in the wheel. And when you have people like us who are thinking, you know what, I want something better than that. And we become the weirdos and the crazies and stuff. So,
well,
and I'm all right with
that. We're going to talk a little bit about farming here, but I have this story the other day, and I know I talked about this it was last summer, because Nebraska was fooling around with this, but the lobbyists killed the bill in Nebraska, but they didn't kill it in Colorado. Colorado becomes first state to pass right to repair for farmers. Now, this is a significant, people may not think it's significant, but it is very significant, because what the bill basically says is that John Deere cannot force you, if you buy their equipment, they cannot compel you to have to pay their service technician to come to your place, or you have to bring your tractor to their place to be repaired. That you have the right to, just think about this, command and control. Even from supposedly wonderful country bumpkin John Deere, that the command and control structure has made it all the way to John Deere, to where John Deere is now making tractors that are so complex and complicated, and they don't need to be, but you know, you have to have bougie development dweller farmers in there that just sit in there in the cab of there. Sometimes they're not even in the cab, sit in the cab of the combine playing solitaire on their smartphones. But there apparently are a lot of people that want the right to be able to repair their own equipment. And so Colorado says, well, they should be able to do that. Well, you know, they tried the same thing in Nebraska, and John Deere's lobbyists killed it. Last summer, the lobbyists in Nebraska, that bill was like two votes away from being passed. And John Deere's lobbyists were able to get to enough Nebraska legislators. Or maybe they passed and the governor vetoed it. It's not a law. I know that. But Colorado, Jared Polis has actually signed the bill. It's now a law. You can repair your own tractor in Colorado. Brian Kay, I shudder to think that a day would arise when you would actually have to get enacted in the legislature to act as your own tractor mechanic.
Well, I mean, we have to have an act in the legislature to tell us what a woman is.
Touche.
So, you know, I mean, it's pretty darn sad. The farm I worked on growing up, we had a lot of old equipment, but it was reliable equipment, and it was very easy to work on it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we learned on. And if you, you know, I don't know where a lot of these new farmers are getting all this money to keep getting this new equipment on. If they're leasing it or what, but still, it's, I mean, these are, you know, these new cotton pickers that come out that, you know, they pick the cotton and they put it in a nice roll and, you know, drop it off. Those things are easily over $1 million. It's like, where are they getting this money? So, I don't know. I think it goes back to, you know, well, it goes back to out of scale. We're out of scale. And we need these bigger and bigger machines with all this technology and stuff. And they're getting to the point to where they say only we are smart enough to repair our equipment. Only we, you know, can do all this stuff. And again, it just, I think well, it,
I think it's worse than that, Brian. Let's go back to my discussion last segment about utilitarianism. Mm-hmm. They're just making the thing now so that people don't actually have to do anything. These people aren't farmers. They're freaking button pushers. They're button pushers that order fertilizer and stuff. They're not going out there and running their hand through the land and what have you. Let me bring Mittermundi in here, the old farmer. Old farmer, you and I are old enough to remember a day when you didn't have a choice. You had to get a set of snap-on tools, sockets and wrenches and hydraulic jacks out and what have you, and you had to fix your own stuff.
Well, that's what made people like you and me just barely knowing enough about a little bit of everything. Fix the engine, you could weld, you could a little bit of hydraulics, and you could work at the voltmeter, and it's like, yeah, you could figure that all out. But you got to remember, too, it's not only what you said, Mike, they're making it so you cannot work on.
It's a closed compartment.
I mean, it's locked out. It's a locked out system. You aren't even allowed. And of course, the next part of it, if it doesn't work up to the California EPA standards, we're going to shut it off until we have time to come out and fix it so it meets legal standards. So it's so messed up.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it, Dan, that they're programming these things in now so that as laws get passed, like in California, as you just mentioned, that the California version of the EPA will be able to buy satellite from satellites, will be able to look at your tractor. That's going to be transmitting data that you didn't tell it to transmit. It's going to tell the satellite, hey, his O2 sensor is out. He's in violation of California EPA Air Quality Standards Act. And then the satellite is going to beam a signal down to that tractor and is going to shut it off.
Unbelievable.
Who wants to live in this world? Who wants to work in this world? Now you've built a machine that can actually starve people because of an arbitrary measurement of something called O2.
I've got enough trouble keeping the tractors running by without them jumping down. Last summer, I spent $6,000 trying to get the old beast up and going, and it's got another problem now, which is probably going to cost $1,000. But, I don't want to make any money at this anyway. It might be too much fun, and too many people would want to start doing it.
I don't think you're in any danger of that.
No, you're right.
But so John Deere, yes, your American hero corporation, are making tractors and making products now. If you look at them, and I've seen one of them, the engine compartment actually is sealed with bolts. And there is a warning sticker on there that if you break that seal, you violate the warranty.
I haven't seen those pictures. I certainly.
Oh, I saw them when Nebraska was the guys in Nebraska were when that bill was going through Nebraska through the legislature. The dude who was a farmer and he was a Nebraska state senator. They there was a little documentary that was made about that. They went to his farm, to his barn, and he opened the hood of that John Deere and he showed the cameraman. He goes, "This is what I currently have." And he showed the seal. If you are violating the warranty, if you take basically, I'm just going to, I'll be silly for a moment because I don't remember exactly what it was. If you take the valve cover off, you're going to violate the warranty.
Oh, I absolutely believe it. And I remember reading in those articles that it wasn't like, well, okay, John Deere would accommodate the schedule of a farmer during planting season, have a technician available 24 hours a day. No, they broke down on Friday at 5 o'clock. Don't call us till Monday.
That's right. Even though you have a field that has to be harvested, and if you don't, the stuff's going to start going bad. Sorry, we're not open on weekends.
Yep. That's one of the things that stunned me is that they've taken themselves so far out of.
Well, the machines are taking over. They want the machine. I mean, this isn't farming anymore. Let me go back to BK for a minute. You know, Brian, I'll tell you a story about the RV that we have out at Walls Inn and West. There's on the main door, there is the cabin door, which is solid and metal, and then there is the screen door that you can use. So if it's a beautiful day, you can leave the cabin door open, and you can use the screen door to let the wind through. Well, in between trips, the little knob that goes into the hasp on the screen door would not push, something was wrong with it, it wouldn't push in so that you could close the screen door. Every time you had to do it manually. So I'm sitting there going like, and I'm thinking, and I'm thinking like a modernist. And I'm going, well, I'm going to call the tractor. I'm going to call the company. I'm going to complain. I'm going to get a guy. And I'm like, wait a minute, you dummy. Take it, dude, look at it. So I'm looking at it going like, well, it looks like I may be able to work on it. So I figured out how to get it off. And it's just a little gizmo that connects to a little tiny knob that you can turn left or right for open or close. And then it has a little thing that all doors that have hasp that you can, you know, that it goes a little spring. It's rounded on one end and 90 degree on the other. So I'm looking at it going like, okay, well, I think I can figure out how to take it off. So I figured out how to take it off. And I'm looking at it going like, and I still can't get it to close. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, play middle of nowhere. And I had my tools with me. So play Gilligan's Island. What are you going to do, Mike? I'm like, I'm going to figure out how to take this joker apart. So I got my vise, my oversized vise grips out. I strapped it down to my little metal meal prep table, actually. And I just started looking at it, going like, okay, well, it looks like that little pin right there is what holds it together. Long story, Brian, I figured out how to take that joker apart. And once I got it apart, I saw what was happening, which was that in the design of the thing, the spring sat in a little channel, and the spring had, for whatever reason, was not seated correctly in the channel, and when the thing had gotten pushed in, it just got stuck. So I just had to take it apart, take the spring out, and, you know, I just kind of, you know, gingerly got a little tiny screwdriver, got it off. The moral of the story is I took the whole thing apart, which could look kind of daunting because, you know, it's a sealed compartment. Figured out what was wrong with just simple mechanics, fixed it, put it back together, and it works like a charm today. Imagine if that little hasp was on the cab of a new John Deere tractor.
you would have to wait for the technician to come out who has GPS on his work truck so they can track where he's going too. You know, yeah, I don't know if you knew that. So they put GPS on those things. But yeah, but you would have to wait. And if if town's 30 miles away, how much productivity have you lost because you're waiting on the mechanic?
But how many people would have done like, well, I'm just going to call John. They're going to come out. And wouldn't have gone like, okay, there's got to be a human put this. They put this thing together. There's got to be a way to take it apart.
Yeah. Well, I would have gone on YouTube and said, searched for a video on how to fix it.
Well, okay, so that's the that's the doing the Lord's work Rosary Company's method. I asked Candace's Maggie's dad, well, how'd you fix it? He go, well, how you think I fixed it, church? YouTube.
YouTube University.
YouTube University. There ain't nothing you can't do on YouTube.
But the thing is,
but it's true. You're looking to take something apart. Go to YouTube. There's a video. Somebody is taking that thing apart.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, heck, they got chicken butchering videos. I see people cleaning deer. I mean, that doesn't bother me because people are sharing skills.
No, no, it's fine. I love that part. Yeah. That's a beautiful part of you, Boo. Maybe the only beautiful part.
Mm-hmm. But some of us, growing up, like I said, I'm glad I worked on the farm because I learned how to do a lot of things. I learned how to build fence and do a lot of that stuff that are coming in handy now. I had a tree fall down on one of the fences last week, and I had to move the cows and get material and do all this stuff. And if I didn't have those skills and know what I needed, I would have been SOL, so it's good that a lot of us learned a lot of things. I wish I would have paid more attention to when my dad was working on things and fixing things, because he was, he could do electrician stuff. He could do some light plumbing. He could do some stuff, and some of that I can do, but then you would have learned how to do it. And he did, especially on the electricity, he did it right. He made sure, you weren't going to start a fire with what you're doing or something like that. And that's important because you get into some people, and I think the worst house to live in is a house that that an electrician lived in, because a lot of electricians do shortcuts and stuff, and that's this house right here. And I've had to call the electrician because there were some things that were way beyond my, you know, deal to fix some things. But still, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, they're all like that, but the guy who built this house, it was like that. Anyway, just, you know, the moral of the story is learning how to do something and by taking it apart. And, you know, I've had to do that with, you know, like some of the, you know, my tools and equipment, you know, that break down. You know, I had to take the weed eater apart and clean out the filter and all this stuff. And, you know, whatever, you know, it just, but it again, you know, it goes back to not having to depend on someone else to come do it. And if it's not under warranty, then how much are you going to pay on top of that? You know, so.
But yeah. Now look at a modern automobile. It mm-hmm. used to be that all you needed was a rudimentary knowledge of, let me bring Mitter Mundy back in. Mitter Mundy, all you needed was a rudimentary knowledge of why things work.
Well, that's right. There's an old poem about Model T Ford. I can't remember all the lines, but I do remember one of them was, all I carried was a roll of wire and a pair of shears, and that's all I needed for 15 years.
You can figure out pretty much, and this would be some trial and error, but you could figure out pretty much how to do most anything you needed to on your own automobile all the way up until probably around 2004, 2005, 2006, somewhere up in there, where they introduced the completely modular computer monitoring chip systems, where, you know, the little computer was monitoring this, it was monitoring the O2, it was monitoring that, and was relaying all this to the electronic fuel injection system, and then that would relay that, and then you'd have all these systems. Now you look at an engine, you take the you pop the hood, you might not even see spark plug wires. If you have a gas engine, you may look at it going, where the hell is this? Where's the distributor cap? Well, it's there somewhere. You're just going to take all sorts of stuff off to get to it. But here's the thing. If you don't have the machine to hook up to the little port there and to actually diagnose what it is that's wrong with it, most people today, they've made the automobiles so that you can't work on them.
Well, that's even true of people who do it professionally now. And one of the ways, I'm sure Busted Knuckles will tell you, if we get him on there, he'll tell you that a lot of private guys like them cannot afford all of the individual software and programming tools that you need to get into the cars. They share them amongst themselves, you know, and I've had that. One of the things to get beyond me is, okay, I can't fix this anymore. And he'll take it to the local shop, and he goes, okay, Dan, it'll be a day or two because I got to get my, you know, we trade software around. Because they and there's also some of them, there were talk, I guess it has not happened yet, where the big manufacturers were going to make it unavailable to the local.
That's right.
So now it's not even a question of, well, how, you know, they're trying to starve them out financially. They're just going to say, nope, no, can't have it. And that, and same thing John Deere's doing. So I'm sure that it would become big news, lawsuits, all kinds of things going on about it. But in the meantime, people like, well, Mr. Knuckles, they can't make a living.
Yeah, well, the reason that we talk about these kinds of issues and these things, folks, here on a Free Farm Friday on the Crusade Channel on the Mike Church Show, live talk radio the way it should be. The reason we talk about them is not that we want to be Luddites and that we're not going to use the block and tackle to move the 1,500 pounds, or that we don't see the use of a tractor or a drill press or a lathe or anything of the sort here. But it is the fact that that this corporate market, this unicorp, if you will, because it's all kind of coalescing into becoming in almost every instance here, where we're coming towards a day where there's one solution to every particular issue like the one we're talking about here. Now there are other tractor companies out there. You can buy a Kubota. You can buy a... Brian, what other brands are available now? Kubota, other than John Deere?
Oh, yeah. Kubota, Mahindra, Ford.
Ford. You can get a Ford, so it'll fix or repair daily.
Pace International, New Holland. I mean, there's... Oh, do they still make Massey Ferguson? I don't know if they do or not.
I think Massey Ferguson got bought. Mid or Monday, didn't Massey Ferguson get bought?
Ferguson got bought many years ago. I mean, they still have a lot of these things that applies to lawnmowers, too. Like, you know, you still go out and get a wheel horse and a Gravely. None of them are in little independent companies anymore.
No, Gravely got bought. Gravely is no longer Gravely.
Yeah, they all got all those kind of things. I mean, you say even on a homeowner's basis. You may see the name, but they're all coming out of the same factory in China with a different name.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Even like the John Deere mowers and stuff. I don't think John Deere makes those mowers. They just slap their sticker on it and add, you know, $200 to the value. You know, it's just there's a lot of them.
So you're basically approaching, my point was, Brian, you're basically approaching, and it's coming very fast, and maybe in some fields it may already be there, where you basically have uni-supplier. You got one omnipotent supplier that's cranking all this crap out, and as you said, it's just slapping, whether it's a green paint job on that one, on the Gravely, there's the trademark golden orange yellow on the Gravely, and the Gravely logo. Mr. Gravely sold out. If you're remotely successful, they will either buy you or they'll put you out of business. They're going to come to you and they're going to go like, look, here's the deal. You're going to sell your brand to us. And you know, the family might go, no, we're not. And we're like, okay, well, you can go bankrupt then because we have the lobbyists. We're going to put you out of business. Folks, this centralization is at the heart of everything. There's almost nothing that's impervious to it. And I don't believe that that's just me talking, Brian. I think that people with you, like you that have experience in the field can actually bear witness to this, that the single supplier for almost all of these different tasks and different things that you would need mechanized or machinery to do is coming to a point where they're almost all manufactured using the same methodology and the same places. It's easy to see what the danger to that could be, and the least of which is, okay, you're buying something with the knowledge that it's going to break and there's nothing you can do about it.
And you know, you're seeing this, would you call it homogenization or whatever?
I'd call it that.
Yeah, you're seeing it in everything. I mean, look at, you know, with the whole Bud Light fiasco, and you start looking in the InBev. I mean, look at, they just sucked them all up, you know? All these companies, it's not just, you know, tractors, it's beer, it's, you know, pretty soon, you know, is it going to be automobiles? You know, how many more automakers are going to disappear? You know, it's all over. And I think, maybe it's all geared toward, you know, this goal of this one world government where you have one government, one product, one, you know, whatever, you know, there's one for it, and you don't have any choices. And then the quality decline, you start getting inferior products, and you have to, I mean, look at, you know, how many garages you go in and there's, you know, 50, 60 year old refrigerators still kicking.
Well, mine.
Yeah.
1996, 1995 Kenmore, baby.
Yeah. But then you go buy a new Samsung that can't make 3 or 4 years.
Well, it's forced obsolescence, as they call it. And now, Mitter Monday, we were warned about this by many, many people, but you will remember this. One of the people that warned us about this monetization, when I say monetize, I don't mean to make money of it. I mean monetization, singular, unitize, making everything where things come from one place. One of the ways that we were warned about when you and I were little children, a man named Theodore Geisel wrote a book, and then they made a cartoon out of it, and it aired on CBS, and it was called The Lorax. Mm-hmm. And you remember what happened to with the Lorax? It's a wonderful little story, and it's, you know, I remember Rush Limbaugh talking about Ted Geisel and calling him a liberal and saying the Lorax was right.
Well, yeah, it was. I mean,
if you don't remember the story, the Lorax is a little blue furry creature that was living in this one idyllic forest. And one day you heard a chopping sound, and then it goes, timber, and a tree falls.
Yep.
And at first it was just men that were cutting the trees down. But then they built a little city out of the trees. You remember the story?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then they came and started cutting down the trees. It was first like men, and then it became
machines.
The whole thing was they totally defoliated it. They built factories. It was nothing but a smoking wasteland at the end, and the Lorax was left there crying, watching it.
And so at the end of the story, and I'm sure that Maggie could show you guys this in the chat room, at the end of the story, there's one, Dan, what's left at the end of the story? The Lorax and what? One tree.
One tree and tree or a seed? I'm trying to remember. They needed the fluff off the tree to make sneeds or something like that. It was all the rage. Everybody in the world needed to have one, so they defoliated the forest in order to make these trinkets that everybody in the world needed.
Here, and this is just according to they made a movie about it in 2012. Yeah, according to Wikipedia, Lorax is a children's book written by Dr. Seuss and published in 1971. If you don't know, when I said Theodore Geisel, Ted Geisel, you see some books published by Ted Geisel. It's Theo LeSieg. It's Geisel spelled backwards. Very crafty character, Ted Geisel. The Lorax, titular character who speaks for the trees and confronts the Onceler, a business magnate who causes environmental destruction. Just like most of Dr. Seuss's works, most of the creatures mentioned are original to the book. And the story, Dan and Brian, is commonly recognized as a fable concerning the danger of greed causing human destruction to the natural environment, using the literary element of personification to create relatable characters for industry, the Onceler, the environment, the truffula trees, Dan. That's what it was, the truffulas.
Oh, truffulas.
The truffula trees and environmental activism, the Lorax. Actually, the Lorax wasn't an environmental activist so much as he was an existentialist. He just didn't want to go extinct.
Gee, I don't know if you classify that in any political, I shouldn't say that anymore. I say you wouldn't classify it under any political denomination that some people don't want to die, but I'm not sure that's true anymore.
And they conclude, after finishing his story, the Onceler realizes what the Lorax meant. Unless somebody cares, the situation will not improve. He then gives the boy the last truffula seed and urges him to grow a forest from it, hoping that the Lorax and the animals will return. So it's a metaphor. This is 1971, Theodore Geisel was writing The Lorax, and it was a cautionary tale about this. You know, Brian, let me bring Brian Kabeck in here. You can relate this to monoculture and to big ag, too. They did the exact same thing. It's a different substance. It's not a truffula tree. It's wheat. It's corn.
Yeah, soybean.
Soybean. Yeah. Right. There you go.
Whatever, you produce massive amounts of it, and you have to figure out what to do with it. So we start feeding cows. We start feeding pigs. We start, doing all this stuff with it. And then it gets, there's still so much that you can make plastic out of corn. Or you can make there's an overabundance. Even, when they talk about all these years, when the prices go higher because the yields are down, it's like they're still artificially low because we produce so much. And I think it's done to, just to keep everything, even or equal or whatever, and nobody can really flourish in that, especially in the commodity system. And I think, when you put it into something else, you see the same thing. So it's all, you know, a factory worker, or you know, for the whatever the industry can't do. You know, they produce this much. Mm-hmm. They can't. They shouldn't do more. They shouldn't do less. You know, it should this much. Well, same thing they're doing with the farmers. You know, this is what you do. And then the government gets in and says, you can only farm this amount of acres. You have to take 10% out and not farm it or whatever when you start getting into these programs and stuff. So it's all, you have a, you know, set amount and it, you know, so you can feed all your whatever lobbyists or, you know, or the lobbyists can feed all the politicians and stuff and just keep the system going like it is. And you know, we're ruining and not sustaining millions of acres of land because of this failed system. And you know, I've the past month I've been to a lot of water quality meetings, and our water quality just in general, I think, you know, nationwide, but Texas in particular, you know, some of these places I'm visiting, you know, this industrialization of everything is the culprit. And you know, you go to the, you know, Austin area, and they're building these big Samsung factories and Tesla plants and all this other big, you know, just big plants. And you have to have people there to run them. Well, when you have all these people on the landscape, you need to find water for them. You need to find, you know,
that's right,
to live.
And people don't consider that. It's just like the crisis that we now have in the Great West. With those, what is it, 7 states, 40 million people all getting their water from the Colorado River.
Uh-huh. And that is unsustainable. And, you know, when your water source, your watershed for your lakes and everything that you draw the water from is desert, how does that make sense? You know, people were trying to, you know, do, you know, they're ringing the alarm bell. The problem is their solutions aren't going to work.
Oh, Biden's solution is more regulation. Well, yeah, what we need is more regulation of the Colorado River. No, what you need is for people. Look, nobody has a perfect answer to this, but I can tell you that one of the answers and one component of the answer is some of those people are not going to get the water that they need. They're going to have to leave.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how you give up a house that you can't sell to someone. the government come in and buy the debt out under some sort of a land use bailout act? I don't know. I do not have the answer, but I can tell you this, that that problem that has been brought about by that particular drought is not solved. You cannot solve that by further regulating and rationing the water. If you're rationing the water, you're delaying the inevitable. Now, I suppose that there could be a massive torrent of rain over the next couple of years that would refill Lake Mead and the giant reservoirs, and then all would be right with the world. It doesn't look as though that's going to happen in the short run. I suppose it's possible that it could, but what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't? The people that are in there that are below Lake Mead and below Lake Haversham, what's the other giant reservoir? The one that's down 1,000 feet. Whatever it is, there's people that are below those. And if you think, you look at the aerial photograph of that. Lake Tahoe is another one. You look at an aerial shot of these lakes, the satellite image, and look at one from 10 years ago, you can see where the water has receded. Then you get a ground-based shot, and you see that, well, dude, we're not talking 10 feet. You're talking in 1 inch, 900 to 1,000 feet over that over masses of square miles. You're talking about rainfall that would be needed for, you know, I'm not a mathematician, but I would imagine decades to refill those things up. Rationing is only going to delay the inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's unsustainable. And the way they measure water is they call it acre feet. So okay, it's a foot of water per acre. So just think of how many millions of acre feet of water you need refill that reservoir. Now, I think, you know, with the really wet and snowy winter that they had in a lot in the Sierra Nevada and everything, you're starting to see some things fill up and the snow melt starting, and they're talking about some of the lakes. They're not on the Colorado River, but some of the other, you know, the other, like maybe the Sacramento River and some of those rivers and stuff, LA River and stuff. They're, you know, the lakes that are on those, that they're starting to fill up. But when you get into another drought, you're just back, you know, going back to what you are. So it's because there's too many straws, and then a lot of the straws are wasting. You know, there's no concept of conservation. And, you know, let's educate the homeowner. Let's not have a, you know, lush green lawn. Let's, you know, let's have our lawn or whatever adapt to the environment that we live in. You know?
Or let's stop making 1/8 of an acre zero lot line neighborhoods. It'll make them illegal. You're paving over what used to be an environment there that is needed for the ecosystem. Larger lots and encourage agriculture on them.
Yeah,
as simple as that.
If you do that, you'll infiltrate that water and it'll go back to the aquifer.
There you go.
They don't think about that.
So. Well, we're out of time, guys. I just wanted to tell you that the church farm this spring is looking really good. I had great success this year, and Brian, I don't know if you have you ever raised from seeds. I raised Amish paste and New Girl tomatoes.
Nice. Yeah, I did all my tomatoes are starters this year that I started.
All my maters except the four little cherry mater plants that I bought from my buddy down the road. All of my maters, I have one full bed, and I have 28 in total. 16 and 14 Amish paste and New Girls, all from seed. We have 16 beautiful, 3 foot tall now, broccoli plants that are already floretting or flowering in the center. And they are in a single bed that they weren't in last year that was overgrown with crimson clover. That was the cover crop. And they look, like I said, they're flowering. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
In another bed, we've got pickling cukes and English cukes growing. And they're crawling up the little chicken wire that I built. And I have successfully, and I grew these from seeds, 28 now heads purple romaine lettuce that are all now growing. The herb garden has all herb we need in it. My corn bed is not the trucker's favorite because I don't grind the corn. It is one of those hybrid sweet yellow corn, and I got a whole bed of corn. So the church farm looks pretty good this year. I don't know if I'm going to get any harvest out of it, but right now it has promise.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I have to give a shout out to daughter number 3.
Oh yeah,
you saw her picture. She's turning into a little farmer over there. So had some real pretty radishes and green beans, and a lot of her other stuff was looking good. So
saw that, and of course you were already harvesting squash and all sorts of vegetables.
Yeah, squash, green beans. I'll have tomatoes here pretty soon. Cucumbers. I got to pickle some green beans this week, so.
I might know a guy you could send a jar to for Bloody Marys, but.
You're on the list.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Well, guys, I got to go. We got to go. We're live from the center next Friday from the TLM Center for the Congress. We should be able to make the connection. Mid or Monday? God bless you, brother.
Yes,
well, I will see you on probably Thursday evening, I guess.
We should be there Thursday morning, actually, late Thursday morning.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be here. Brother Andre and Brother Joseph Mary are coming in Thursday evening, and there's some people are going to pick them up. They're going to stay here, but we'll be midday Thursday. We will be in Arnoville, and we should be able to
basically.
Yeah, we should be able to have we'll be able to make the phone connection from there. So we'll have a free farm Friday live from the center. Brian, God bless you and your family. We will talk to you next Friday.
I hope so. I'll be driving the family back from Albuquerque.
Oh, okay. Is this vacation week?
No, it's not. I am home. I'm working. Suzanne's dad had surgery, so.
Oh, the knees, the knees.
Yeah, 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 and they're up there helping out. So that's the reason we will not be able to make it next
week.
Well,
God bless on the recovery.
Thank you, thank you. We're sad, and we'll be praying for a successful Congress.
So. Well, pray for no. You need to pray for Mitt or Mundy, who's got to do all that cooking without you.
I know. We got
a great team. We got a great team. We're gonna miss him. We got a great team.
Yeah, we're gonna miss him.
I'll miss y'all too.
All right, brother. Well, hey, God bless you, and if we talk next Friday, great. If not, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. God bless y'all.
All right, brothers. We got to go. Mitt or Mundy, God bless you. I'll see you soon. All right, brothers. We got to go. Mitt or Mundy, God bless you. I'll see you soon.